Chapter 20. Fury of Fenris. Friedisch was on shift when Call marched in and hauled him out from his workstation by the elbow. "Domino Majors Hester Aspertius Sigma Sigma wishes to see him," he said to the supervising tech priest. The man waved them out with a complete lack of interest. No one liked to go against the Domino, especially now. Unlike Friedisch's place of toil, the corridor Call hustled him along was brightly lit, and Friedisch's human eyes screwed up against the change in illumination.
"What are you doing? Aren't you supposed to be seeing to your troops?" he said mockingly.
"What's that attitude for?"
"I never saw you as a warrior, Belisarius," said Friedisch.
"Are you jealous, Friedisch?" asked Call.
"No,"
said Friedisch, too fervently to be believable. "You're the one who was always pressing me to take up a specialisation," said Call. "I've had one chosen for me."
"Then why aren't you with the Thalaxi?"
Call glanced about to make sure they were alone. "I've taken an unauthorised leave of absence. A permanent one."
"You're not."
"I am," said Call. "I'm leaving. I'm going to give you a choice, Friedisch. I am leaving this system today."
"How?"
Call bundled Friedisch into a servitor recharging bay. 6 energy stands stood against the walls. Only one was occupied. The cyborg slumped in inactivity while its batteries drew power. "Aspertia has a needle ship. Small and fast, warp capable," Call said.
"I know she's got a ship," said Friedisch snappishly. "You can't take it."
"I can. It's called stealing."
"Yeah, I know what it's called. You can't do it."
"Our kind steal knowledge all the time. How is a ship any different?"
"I'm going to get killed listening to this."
Friedisch made to move. Call shoved him into the wall.
"You'll get killed anyway," he said harshly. "The space wolves are coming here. Now." "The space wolves? The executioners?" said Friedisch quietly.
"Long-range scans picked them up 20 minutes ago. They'll be here within 3 hours, and they will kill us all. If they don't, being in the service of the War Master will, and I will not serve that traitor." "Did you see him?"
"But what are we going to do?" said Friedisch in a panicked whisper. "The Domino is still doing hourly sweeps for dissent."
He shuddered.
"She dissolved the last adept who showed signs of defiance in acid. Oh, by the blood of the machine, we're going to get caught."
He gave the inactive cyborg a terrified look.
"She's got ears everywhere.
No one can hear us," said Call exasperatedly. "Friedisch Adam Silip Quovo, I sometimes think you believe me an idiot. I have made sure no one will be aware of what I am saying to you. No one. Do you understand?" Friedisch slumped and nodded. "Serving Horus will kill us, or worse," Call went on. "Did you see his witch? Did you see him?"
"I was not privileged enough to be so close as you," said Friedisch.
"It was no privilege. Count yourself lucky," said Call. "Horus Lupercal is no longer human of any sort, nor are his servants. I've seen them up close, dear friend."
"We promised knowledge," said Friedisch. "Forbidden knowledge. Are you not tempted?"
"Of course I'm tempted. But sometimes forbidden knowledge is forbidden for good reason. We have to get out of this place."
"I don't know. Domino Aspertia said..."
"Never mind what Aspertia says," snapped Call. "She's wrong. You can't serve creatures like Horus and profess the neutrality of knowledge. High principles are no defence against the kind of corruption Horus's service brings." He gritted his teeth. "Knowledge can never be neutral. She has fallen prey to the limitations of human thought."
"What do you mean?" said Friedisch.
"She is convinced she is right. As everyone with an opinion is convinced they are right." Call stared hard at his wide-eyed friend. "The truth is, no one ever is. The assumption of truth blinds one to the shading of actuality. It's all subjective. We can only do the best we can, and she has made the wrong choice."
"The War Master is probably going to win. You realise that?"
said Friedisch. He was already defeated, already giving in.
"He's going to take Terra. It might be better to be on the winning side."
Call punched his friend hard in the chest.
"What did you do that for?"
Friedisch said, shocked. "I'm knocking some sense into you, fool." "It is probable that Horus will win," admitted Call. "But some things are too precious to be left to the whims of probability.
If we all give in, he will win for certain. Every one of us that defies him lessens his chances.
Friedrich's eye narrowed.
Hang on. If I decide not to come with you...
His gaze fell on Kohl's serpenta. Kohl gave Friedrich an angry, meaningful look.
Now I'm a murderer, he said after a moment's uncomfortable silence. I'll rely on you keeping your mouth shut. I'm not going to kill you if you don't come with me, but that's all academic because you are coming with me.
You're making a big mistake, I just know it, said Friedrich.
I assure you I am not, said Kohl. Action is the instigator of success. If we stay, we will die.
Friedrich's face screwed up with the agonies of indecision.
Oh, very well.
Good. We're going now. We need to cross Momus to the other side of the Heptalagon. Aspertia has her ship in a private dock in Scepter Station's tube tether. We've got a lot of ground to cover, and precious little time to do it. For the second time in a month, Tresolian found itself under attack. The Space Wolves drove relentlessly to the centre of the Warmaster's fleet, making directly for the vengeful spirit itself. As Horus's command ship was moored at the capital, Heptalagon was caught in the centre of the storm. Before Kohl and Friedrich had made it halfway to their destination, the tiny moon and its parasitic stations rocked to the pounding of Loyalist guns. Beyond the flimsy walls of the facility, the Legion fleets were locked in battle, ferocious as brawling animals. The Tech Adepts abandoned the main ways as soon as the Space Wolves began landing raiding parties and moved to the lesser tubules linking the massive tube tethers. These were fragile but unimportant, and Kohl was banking on them being empty of combatants and therefore safer. His decision seemed erroneous to Friedrich, as the tube they traversed was swaying dangerously, metal and plastic moving liquidly as the tube tethers it budded from came under bombardment. Friedrich clutched at Kohl's arm.
Oh, we can't get away, he moaned. We'll never be able to steal her ship.
We can. Now shut up, said Kohl. He stopped the transit cart he'd liberated and waited to ride out the ripples in the corridor. The station settled, groaning with metallic pain as its fabric tore under the stress. Breezes gusted over them, carrying the rumour of far-off decompressions. Fine, said Kohl. He set the cart into motion again. Its angled wheels gripped the sides of the narrow tubeway, propelling them down it at high speed. Lights flickered by, blurring into streaks. An explosion nearby shook the floor. Kohl did not stop this time. Friedrich's face slammed into the roll cage of the cart, and he howled in pain. Lumens flickered out. Smoke poured from atmospheric recycling units, hazing the air. Tesla stood solid as a rock on the back of the cart, heavy-duty mag clamps making him as imperturbable as a statue. Blood spurted from Friedrich's broken nose.
Oh, that was a hit. A hit on the tube. We should have stuck to the main way.
The main way is full of legionaries,
shouted Kohl over the rush of the wind. Another hit crimped the corridor's sides. Air whooshed loudly through holes in the metal. Kohl braked with a second to spare, coming to a halt, tyres smoking a mere metre before the damaged section. The floor was concertinaed and impassable.
The cart won't make it over that. We'll have to walk. There's the door at the end. We're nearly there.
We're going to die.
Move,
Kohl shouted. The door out of the corridor lay a few hundred metres ahead. Kohl dragged Friedrich up from the cart seat.
Move!
Head bowed, shoulders set, Kohl half-dragged the other tech priest behind him towards the door. Tesla clambered from the cart and thumped after them. The spar shook again, whipping about like a wounded snake. Kohl tumbled down the way like a stone rattled in a rations tin. He came to rest, his head spinning, and could not rise. Maybe Friedrich was right. Maybe they were going to die. Chemical smoke burned his nostrils, his eyes watered. The battle was coming closer. The explosions were louder. Alarms screamed from every quadrant. An iron grip snapped closed around his robes. Tesla hauled him to his feet. Friedrich dangled from the servitor's other manipulator. Tesla plodded forwards as if the floor were completely still. They passed through the door. Tesla cast them into a corridor full of blessedly clear air. Its machine spirit honking out a doleful warning, the door closed, and a blast door slammed over the top, sealing the spa way for good. Call scrambled up to an armourglass window. The void sparkled like bright sunlight on water. Ships passed each other at insanely close quarters, rolling over as they brought their full complement of weapons to bear. Void shields blazed with impact displacement. Vessels drifted, ablaze from stem to stern. At the center of this storm of war, the Hrafnikel grappled with the vengeful spirit. Call recognized them both. Such was their fame. They were brothers, equally immense, Gloriana-class battleships of the largest sub-patterns. Their kilometers-long bulks made the Heptalagon and its host moonlet seem pathetic in size. They were old warriors now, diminished in potency by war, but still deadly, and still determined to kill. Broadsides belched from the massive guns ranged along each ship's flanks, hammering into their opposite number, trading punches like aging pugilists unwilling to give in. Their shields crackled with lightning. They were committed to a brutal slogging match that would end only when the strongest combatant remained alone, bloody but standing. The Heptalagon suffered for its role as battlefield. The Space Wolves were not neglecting the station. Heavy bombardment blasted columns of shattered ice from the surface of Momus that escaped easily from the weak gravity well. Seconda Station had broken free from its tower and floated away with strange serenity, like a leaf in a stream. Its mooring collapsed slowly towards Momus, spewing burning atmosphere from the ragged end. Space Marine gunships dueled over the moon. There were even, he saw, groups of warriors wearing void jets fighting outside. Call was no expert in the field of void war, but he thought the Space Wolves unlikely to make it out of the system. The War Master's subsidiary fleets, comprising elements of the many legions loyal to him, were moving in from the other small worlds to join the battle. Russ's legion faced a large part of the Sons of Horus. The skill of the 6th Legion was widely known, but they were outnumbered at least 2-1. Call could think of only one good reason why Lehman Russ would be behaving so. Friedrich's pallid, nervous face appeared at Call's shoulder.
"Oh, this is suicide," he said.
"They've come to kill the War Master," said Call. "Isn't it obvious? Lehman Russ has committed his entire legion. He's the Emperor's executioner. He's come for the War Master's head."
"Look!"
shrieked Friedrich. He pointed with a shaking finger. Call turned to look. The tube spars surrounding the trunk of the Scepter Station were coming apart. Some attacks were targeted upon the giant shaft, but many appeared to be incidental to the battle going on around the moonlet. The Heptalagon's void shielding was minimal, graded only to protect the station from cosmic debris. A missile struck the weakened tube he and Friedrich had exited. The resulting explosion turned a 50-meter section into a glittering haze of particulates. Tethering hawsers snapped like spider's silk. The spar bent away from the trunk of the tower until acceleration and material stress sheared it off and it floated away to add to the growing mass of battle debris. The trunk was as yet firm, but was marked with many holes, and it vibrated with the impact of city-leveling weaponry. It would not stay intact forever.
"Oh, blood of the machine," said Friedrich. "That could have been us."
"They're coming," said Call. Shoals of boarding torpedoes rocketed out from a frigate that dipped low towards the scepter shaft. The frigate was under attack and coming apart even as it disgorged its armies. Dozens of the torpedoes were obliterated by raging point defence fire, but far more made it through. A different sort of impact shook the tower. Shortly after, new noises reached them from down the endless corridor, a throaty howling and the awful flat banging of Space Marines' small arms fire. Friedrich pawed at Call's shoulder, pulling his attention away from the battle outside. He found it fascinating. There was so much information in the dance of starships and the patterns of fire exchange. It was beautiful. He was no longer afraid. He no longer feared death. The same could not be said of Friedrich.
"Call!"
he said. The noise of feral warriors echoed up the way. It was impossible to tell where it was coming from, but past the vanishing point, destructive light flashed. Call nodded. We need to move on.
Oh, they sound so savage, Friedrich said in terror. Who would make something like them?
The Emperor had his reasons. Call looked out of the window at the battle again, where men, who were once brothers, tore each other apart. That was why the Space Wolves were made. They were watchdogs, created to guard against betrayal.
Are you sure we are choosing the right side?
My friend, said Call, in this war there is only the least bad side, and we are on it. Come on, let's go. Call went ahead. Friedrich dithered, looking back down the long outer corridor of the tether tube, trying to guess where the battle was.
But Call, where are you going?
Friedrich called after his friend.
The Dominar keeps her ship in the mid-range docking halls. That way.
He pointed at a maintenance door set into the floor that led inwards, towards the hollow core of the tower and the giant expressway that ran from Scepter through Momus and up the tether tube of Primer. Call looked ahead, which, in relation to the moon, was up towards the station at the end of the trunk and the void beyond.
We're not going to her ship just yet. We have to pay the Dominar herself a visit, and we have to get there before the Space Wolves do. You never said we were going to do that! You said we were going to steal a ship!
We are, said Call. He set off. Tesla lumbered after him.
But Call! They'll be going after her! They'll kill us!
Friedrich shouted up the corridor, until he realized that Call would not listen to him. At a loss as to what to do, he hurried after. Lehman Russ had his assault launch before the vengeful spirit's shields were down. In their dozens, the Thunderhawks, Fire Raptors, Storm Eagles, Assault Rams, Assault Pods, Boarding Torpedoes, and Stormbirds of the Vilka Fenrika raced across the narrowing gap between the two flagships, carrying three great companies into the den of the enemy. Tra, Sep, and Tolv were granted the honour of serving their king so boldly. Explosions filled the void around them, seeking to bring them down. Anti-fighter and anti-munition guns added their loads of death to the tempest raging between the flagships. It was a desperate action. Only a general with one goal and no requirement of survival would mount a charge that final. The Vilka Fenrika knew what it meant to cross that gap, but they did so willingly. Many gunships were lost, cored out by lasbeam and shell. The pride of the Vilka Fenrika burned in space. But for every boarding craft lost, another 500 meters was gained. With the blood of his sons, Lehman Russ bought entry into the embarkation deck of the vengeful spirit. They penetrated the void shield at a reckless pace, their velocity close to the speed that would trip the energy field's displacement response. Their pilots howled with battle joy as they passed into the space beyond the shield's protection and accelerated. Behind them boiled a wall of fire, where the Harafnikel's ordnance encountered the void shield's barrier. Ahead, the sides of the enemy's flagship rose high. Occasional shells made it through the shields, annihilating themselves against plasteel ramparts in balls of flame, adding to the deep scarring marring the vengeful spirit's plating. Turrets swung into action. Streams of laser light and tracer shells converged on the attacking transports. Gunships exploded, their fragments pinwheeling away, casting dead space marines into the cold grave of space. The gunship's own weapons remained silent, holding their might back for the defences around the embarkation deck. The last of the vengeful spirit's void shields guttered out in a blaze of violet flame, and the full wrath of the Harafnikel vented itself against the hull. Dozens more transports followed the first wave. Their path covered by thunderous broadsides, the gunships dropped low and angled upwards, streaming towards the wide hangar slots of the embarkation deck. Blast doors covered over the vulnerable entrances. Hails of missiles powered away from the Thunderhawk's wings to remove these obstacles. The attack craft swooped in tightly formed flights, discharged their most potent weapons, and peeled away to allow the next formation to take aim. Mounds of flame briefly built themselves up. They fell away like curtains to show blast doors that had become the mouths of metal caves. Ross's squadrons now broke apart. Many flew directly towards the embarkation deck, braving the lattices of lascannon fire from the emplacements covering the entrances. The rest peeled away to land parties elsewhere to support Terminator squads teleporting in from the Hrafnakel, or to shoot down fighters chasing boarding torpedoes sent to penetrate the upper decks. All across the Space Wolves fleet, breaching craft and boarding torpedoes took flight, heading for the vengeful spirits supporting vessels. Following the lessons of nature's swarming insects, they relied on sheer numbers to get them through. Thousands died. The attack seemed reckless, ill thought out, but every move was made with cold calculation. Casualties were but one factor in Russ's plan, a cost to be borne, as the Great Wolf committed his entire legion to the single purpose of killing the War Master. In a strobing flash of engines from hundreds of launching ships, every remaining warrior of the rout went to war.